Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 80 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Joshua Grandison.
And I'm Kayla Hall.
We just encourage people to slow down, be very careful, and really quickly this weekend, hopefully we'll have all of this finished and we'll be able to reopen the bridge.
Alan Blair with the Department of Highways says repairs to Ashland's 12th Street Bridge will begin tonight.
Coal production in Kentucky is down.
And tougher restrictions on motorists who text while they drive in the Commonwealth are in the works.
In sports, the Reds open up a series with another West Coast squad tonight at Great American Ballpark.
Bud Luke has a check of your business world.
Mostly cloudy tonight with showers and thunderstorms likely. Highs in the upper 60s. The complete weather forecast is coming up, but first this news.
State police are investigating a shooting that wounded one man in Rowan County. The incident took place around 3:30 yesterday afternoon at a home on Dry Creek Road. 63-year-old Craig Dauscher has been arrested and charged with assault. The victim, 39-year-old Jamie Minks, was airlifted to UK Hospital and is listed as being in critical condition. Police are still investigating what led to the confrontation.
Work on the damaged 12th Street Bridge in Ashland begins this evening. Maintenance will include replacing the damaged steel beam. Alan Blair, spokesman for District 9 of the Kentucky Department of Highways, says he wants people to be aware of the detours in order to plan accordingly.
It is going to back up traffic. There are going to be delays. If they want to seek alternate routes, that would be a good idea.
Cost for repairs is just over $50,000. Blair says if all goes as planned, the bridge should be reopened Monday.
Ashland City Commissioners have approved a contract with Tri-State Lawn Care for construction of a 62-space parking lot near the Ohio River. Mayor Chuck Charles says the lot should do two things: create more pedestrian traffic along the waterfront and foster additional development there, too.
I think it would encourage a lot more people to come down to the river if they have a place to park. So it's going to kind of cover both ways.
The parking lot will cost the city more than $120,000.
The city of Ashland will soon be supplying water for about 4,500 Boyd County residents who were served by the Big Sandy Water District. City commissioners Thursday approved an agreement with the district to construct about 6 miles of transmission line to extend the service. City Commissioner Kevin Gunderson says it'll generate more than $300,000 in extra income for Ashland.
It'll mean increased revenue for Ashland and lower water rates for the consumer in the Big Sandy Water District.
The Big Sandy Water District obtained some $1.4 million in federal funds to help pay for the project.
Two Chillicothe Correctional Institution officers working when an Ohio death row inmate committed suicide have been placed on paid administrative leave. Department of Rehabilitation and Correction spokeswoman Joellen Smith says the officers were put on leave in accordance with standard practice. She says it's routine in such cases as the prison's department investigates what happened. The officers were not identified, but Smith says one is 30 years old and the other is 19. They were working the weekend when 44-year-old Billy Slagle was found hanging in his cell. It happened days before Slagle's execution date and hours before officers were to begin monitoring him around the clock. Officers at the prison are supposed to check on inmates every 30 minutes.
Three Ashland residents and two other persons accused in a meth-making operation at a South Point, Ohio apartment have pleaded innocent to the charges in Lawrence County Common Pleas Court. 36-year-old Patrick Kelly, 21-year-old Ashley Kelly, 22-year-old Cora Harmon, all of Ashland, and Elvis Adkins of Colgrove and Jessica Robinson of South Point, both 25 years old, were arraigned on the charges Wednesday. The Ironton Tribune reports they were indicted last week by a grand jury on charges of illegally manufacturing drugs at the Lawrence Village apartments. They await pretrial hearings August 21st.
Some young immigration reform activists, known as the Dream Nine, have been released after national protests from undocumented Latinos and their supporters. One member of that group has called Lexington home for the past 7 years. KPR's Karen Czar has that story.
Bring Sepe home!
Si se puede, yes, we can!
Si Speaking both Spanish and English, family and friends of Seferino Santiago chanted on the courthouse lawn, marched with signs, and called lawmakers. They're asking Representatives Andy Barr and John Yarmuth and the Obama administration to grant discretion and allow him and eight others being detained in Arizona to re-enter the United States. Santiago's older brother Pedro was first on the phone.
I'm calling to ask you that you use your discretion and bring my brother Seferino Santiago back home to Kentucky and release the Dream 9 immediately.
The Santiagos have been in Lexington for more than 7 years. Pedro says some are legal, some undocumented, and others have obtained their U.S. citizenship. He himself does have a work visa. Serafino was 13 when his family moved to the Bluegrass. He graduated from Lafayette High School and had plans for a future in America when a need for ear surgery forced him to return to Mexico. He's been gone for more than a year, and when he tried to cross the border this past Monday, he was detained. Family friend Felice Salmon says current laws are keeping families like the Santiagos apart and wants to see immigration reform.
As a nation, we have young people that are wanting to be a part of these communities simply because they don't have a fair way to access becoming a part of our country.
Santiago and the others crossed the border knowing they would be detained in hopes of drawing attention to the proposed federal DREAM Act. If enacted, it would provide a path to legalization for young immigrants brought into the country illegally. For Kentucky Public Radio, I'm Karen Czar.
Coal production in both of Kentucky's coal fields has dropped slightly, and employment is at a record low. KPR's Erica Peterson reports.
The Kentucky Energy and Environment Cabinet's data for the second quarter of 2013 shows that coal production dropped 1.3% statewide in that time period. There was a slight drop in both the eastern and western Kentucky coal fields, but western Kentucky still produced slightly more coal, 50.2% of the total production. But the more dramatic drop is in employment. The data shows a 6% drop since the first quarter of the year. There are now about 12,300 coal miners employed in the state, the lowest since Kentucky began keeping records in 1927. This data is only the latest in a multi-year trend of falling coal production and unemployment, fueled by a variety of diverse and complicated factors, like stricter pollution regulations, cheap and abundant natural gas, and the decline of easily accessible reserves. For Kentucky Public Radio, I'm Erica Peterson.
Environmental groups are suing Fola Coal Company again for runoff from a mountaintop removal mine site that they say is contaminating West Virginia streams. Thursday's filing in U.S. District Court in Huntington mirrors a complaint the Sierra Club and others used to win a settlement with Forla last year for the cleanup of another waterway. In both cases, environmental groups argue the coal company has violated the state's water quality standards, which are general protections rather than numeric standards. This case focuses on a Leatherwood Creek tributary that the groups say is tainted with sulfate and other dissolved solids. More than 60% of land in the watershed is permitted for mining. Four similar lawsuits involving eight impaired streams are pending against Alex Energy, Elk Run Coal Company, and Fola.
While violations are widespread, Kentuckians seem to support tougher restrictions on drivers who text. For a couple years, the Commonwealth has banned texting while driving. And this week, the governor said violators would have 3 points levied against their licenses. If adult drivers receive a dozen points, their licenses are revoked. For minors, it's 7 points. While shopping in a Lexington music store, Jason Howard said he backs the change.
Just looking at statistics and hearing horror stories in the news of accidents that can happen because of texting while driving, you know, I think that, you know, we need to take a hard line on this.
20-year-old Will Burke of Lexington admits to sending text messages while driving. He says it's almost instinctual, but adds he should stop. In some ways, Burke thinks it's more dangerous than drinking and driving. Last year in Kentucky, over 53,000 accidents were blamed on distracted drivers.
The Morehead State University Small Business Development Center is set for its Small Town Merchant Program at Mount Sterling on September 6th. National retail specialist Mark Wilson will be featured at the event. Wilson will be giving advice to local business owners on how things such as window displays and overall presentation can impact their success. Mark Murphy is with the SBDC, and he says Wilson will be visiting local businesses himself to provide critiques.
And after we do the presentation, then business will be able to schedule, and we'll be able to do a walkthrough and actually go out to some of the businesses and do some walkthroughs, and he'll be able to just kind of give his opinion of kind of first look, first glance, kind of show them a few things they're doing right and doing wrong.
The event is free and will include a breakfast. It will take place at the MSU Center in Mount Sterling from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Anyone interested in attending should call 606-783-2895. Deadline for registration is September 2nd.
Work has begun on a veterans center planned in central Kentucky, even though officials are still awaiting final approval from federal officials. Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs Commissioner Ken Lucas tells the News Enterprise that the project in Radcliffe has gotten preliminary approval, and there's no indication that it won't get the final go-ahead soon. A construction bid for the Radcliffe Veterans Nursing Facility has already been awarded, and excavation at the site, which is adjacent to the Kentucky Veterans Cemetery Central, is underway. Lucas says the final cost of the facility is estimated at $40 million, with the state paying 35% and the federal government paying 65%. He says it will be the fourth nursing center in Kentucky authorized specifically for veterans.
And finally today, in less than a week, faculty, staff, and students at Eastern Kentucky University will get a feel for the vision of their new president. As KPR's Stu Johnson reports, the fall convocation will be the first opportunity for many to meet President Michael Benson.
EKU President Michael Benson believes the value of classroom instruction must be the school's top priority. Benson realizes there are many aspects to a university's culture, but his focus must be on academics.
I love sports as much as anybody. I love to compete. I love marching bands. I love all the things that we do in the community. But at our core, the university's primary function is to teach students.
President Benson began his official duties August 1st. In recent months, the EKU community has undergone significant restructuring, including a workforce reduction of about 200 employees. Benson doesn't anticipate any further cuts, nor has he made decisions yet on how $19 million in savings will be spent. For Kentucky Public Radio, I'm Stu Johnson.
And finally today, the Kentucky Arts Council has some grants available to help increase access to the arts for people with limited opportunities. AAA grants support arts programs in areas where age, geographic location, ethnicity, economic status, disability, or other factors make enjoying the arts more challenging. Applications are being taken for programs for people age 65 or older. The council previously awarded more than $50,000 to six organizations this year. Organizations eligible to apply include public libraries, nonprofit organizations, government agencies, and social service agencies, as well as others. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the counties of Fleming, Morgan, and Nicholas. There's a flash flood watch in effect until 8 p.m. this evening. Tonight, mostly cloudy with showers likely and a chance of thunderstorms. Lows in the upper 60s. Chance of rain is 70%. Saturday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the lower 80s. Chance of rain is 50%. Saturday night, mostly cloudy. A slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Lows in the mid-60s. Sunday, partly cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the lower 80s. Currently in Ashland, it is 82 degrees. Flemingsburg, 77 degrees. Inez, 85 degrees. Lexington, 83 degrees. Winchester, 82 degrees. And in Moorhead, it's 80 degrees.
The time is 4:44, and you're tuned in to Mountain Edition here on Moorhead State Public Radio. We're 90.3 FM on your radio dial. I'm Joshua Grandison, sitting in here with Kayla Hall, and we're glad to have you with us as we get set to greet the weekend on this Friday afternoon. On our feature segment, we have commentary from Moorhead State University professor Dr. John Modaff. He has some thoughts on the wages of sin.
We're out here by the highway again after receiving lots of letters and calls, loving the new format. People even suggested I get closer to the road or stand in it. I appreciate the notes. Do you recall a time when Boy Scout was a disparaging term, used to refer to someone who was just too good or rather trying to be too good. Americans have a firmly rooted schizophrenia on the subject of goodness. We like being told the truth, we like being defended when necessary and represented in the most civil ways, but we also like to kick, tear, scratch, and ridicule people who are nice, good, clean, and well-behaved. So we invent mixed terms like Boy Scout or Wonder Woman, which are hostile compliments. Yeah, you're good, but you're too good. Such vocabulary can have even more subtle meanings. Remember when the word clean was used to refer to then-candidate Obama? Remember the context? Remember who said it? The man who marveled at this nice, clean, black man running for president is now our vice president. In that case, clean apparently referred to the future president's personal history, which would produce a mix of a man so good as to be untouchable, but a man so flawed as to avoid the slings and arrows of excessive goodness and the ire that tends to stir in people. So, the pot-smoking didn't matter, the coke-snorting didn't matter, the confabulation with radicals did not matter, the preacher, mad as a hatter, did not matter, the murky records did not matter, the fabrications, syntheses, and poetic liberties in his books did not matter, for he was clean, as then-Senator Biden put it. Clean. And that may be why Mr. Obama continues to survive the most amazing avalanche of executive branch scandals and excesses ever witnessed. We already know all of his dirt. And so no one can threaten him with exposure. He shoveled his own dirt on himself and shut up everyone by doing it first. But this is not the case, clearly, with many of his fellow leaders. They are not Boy Scouts or Wonder Women. They cannot do what their constituents are hollering for. They cannot do what they think is right or best because they are vulnerable to exposure. Their sins have not yet fully been told, though they are known to a few. Why else would the Speaker and so many of his associates hesitate to investigate what happened on 9/11/12 in Libya? When the perpetrators are the CIA and the next President of the United States, you'd better not have any skeletons in the closet yourself. Remember, one of Hillary's favorite things to do, something she has said numerous times, is closet cleaning on a Saturday night. John, Mitch, all of you, now your sins come to visit like Marley. Not Bob, Jacob, the chains of your own sins, which you know the CIA knows, have clamped your lips shut and stilled your pens. These are the wages of sin. Terminal silence. I'm John Modaff.
Dr. John Modaff is an associate professor of speech at Morehead State University. It's 4:48, and Chase Scott has been keeping a check of your sports world. He's up in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR is provided by Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky. From small towns to big cities, wherever you go in Kentucky, there's a good chance you'll see a Toyota Camry. And for good reason. It's America's best-selling sedan made right here in the Bluegrass. But Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky does more than build world-class cars in Kentucky. They're an important part of our communities, providing thousands of jobs and millions in donations to local organizations. Toyota is honored to be a part of your community.
It's time for more exciting Reds baseball. Good evening, reporting for Morehead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Chase Scott. After enjoying a day off yesterday, the Cincinnati Reds are looking to get back on the diamond this evening as they host the San Diego Padres for a weekend series. The Reds have had their share of injuries this season, and veteran backup catcher Corky Miller has experienced some pain in his knee from a collision with a base runner at the plate on Wednesday.
I think it was his knee. If it was his arm, I feel kind of weak, but I think his knee hit right on top of my knee. The slide came in pretty hard and kicked it out. So, I mean, it's stiff. I could barely bend down to catch, and, you know, I don't know if I could have ran if I would have got up again. So, have Doc look at it and go from there.
Tonight's contest will feature Bronson Arroyo for the Reds and Andrew Cashner for the Padres. The first pitch from the Queen City is slated for 7:10. Taking a look around the league for other games later on tonight in the National League, the Braves will host the Marlins, the Nats welcome in the Phillies, the top-placed Pirates are on the road to Colorado to face the Rockies, and the Cards will play at home against the Cubbies. On to the American League, the Yankees will play at home against the Tigers. This will be the first game in New York for Alex Rodriguez since he has appealed his suspension. The A's will be in Toronto to play the Blue Jays, the Royals host the Red Sox, and the Brew Crew will be on the road to face the Mariners. It's a firework night at Whitaker Bank Ballpark as the Legends look for their fifth win in a row against the Hagerstown Suns. The Legends took Game 1 from the Suns last night to increase their South Atlantic Southern League leading record at 29-18. The Legends will toss James Simmons tonight, who holds a 1-3 record. The Suns will counter with Kylan Turnbull, who has recorded a 5-4 slate during the season. First pitch from Whitaker Bank Ballpark starts at 7:05. Masters champ Adam Scott has taken control midway through the second round of the PGA Championship. AP correspondent Jim Militello has more.
Scott managed to master the heavy downpours early in the round on the way to a 2-under-68 that put him in the clubhouse at 7-under par. He rolled in a 40-foot birdie putt on the second hole, his 11th, to get to 8-under for the second of three times during the round. His strong play seemed to rub off on playing partner Justin Rose. The U.S. Open champ had 4 birdies in 5 holes on the way to a 6-under-29 on the front side. He shot 66 to get to 6-under. British Open champ Phil Mickelson posted a second straight 1-over-71. Former U.S. Open champ Webb Simpson tied the course record with a 6-under-64. He's in at 4-under. Jim Militello, Pittsburgh, New York.
While veterans Boone Goldsmith and Logan Johnson appear to be the front runners to be the Morehead State football team's starting quarterback this season, head coach Rob Tenier says some talented freshmen could also factor into the competition. According to Tenier, Jack Sherry from South Oldham High School, Austin Gayhafer of Louisville St. Xavier, and Mitch Gillis from Newburgh, Indiana will get plenty of chances in preseason to show what they can do.
When you run the offense that we run, we want to be as efficient as we can playing our high tempo. And so, you know, it may take in the week one or week two to find out who that guy is. I'd really like to play with one. But if we have to play with two, we'll play with two.
During his senior year at South Oldham, Sherry passed for 2,165 yards and ran for 431 other yards. In his last 2 years at St. X, Gayhafer threw for 2,200 yards and 22 scores, and Gillis passed for over 3,000 yards during his senior year at Castle High School. Up-tempo and fast-paced are the two cornerstones to the new Kentucky offensive scheme, and the Wildcats aren't even close to mastering it. That's according to new offensive coordinator Neil Brown. With just wrapping up their first week of practice, the Kentucky Wildcat football team is taking small strides toward becoming a dynamic offensive squad, but has a ways to go. Neil Brown says that's just what you get when putting together new players with new coaches.
We've got to get a lot better. That's the hardest thing when you're trying to get new guys. We got a bunch, as you all know. That's the hardest thing to get them accustomed to, the tempo we're playing at. And really, probably, if you came out here and watched, it's not bad, but it's nowhere near what we want to do. It's not near the pressure we need to have.
The Wildcats will have 2.5 full weeks of practice before preparing to open up with Western Kentucky on August 31st in Nashville. While the Cincinnati Bengals cruised a victory last night over the Falcons in Atlanta, there's still a great deal of work to be done. That's according to head coach Marvin Lewis. He says one breakdown against a screen pass early on in the game can be used as a coachable moment.
You got to look at that. It's good to get on tape and be able to coach off that and correct some of the error on that particular play. But pleased with the tackling for the most part on defense tonight. He's pleased with the line of scrimmage and being in the right coverage position. We just got to do a little better job playing the ball in the air.
One major positive for Cincinnati was it came out of the game without any players sustaining injuries. The Bengals will head back to Cincinnati to regroup and continue workouts before hosting the Tennessee Titans a week from Saturday in week two of the preseason schedule. And finally, there is more football to be played tonight in the NFL as week one of the preseason continues. Looking at games tonight, the most notable is the Patriots and Eagles in Philadelphia. Lots of questions surround the Eagles about who will be taking the snaps behind center, and head coach Chip Kelly clears up the confusion about what many think the front runner Michael Vick will be starting.
Him and Nicholas with the first team reps. Matt Barkley will play in the second and third quarter is our plan, and then Dennis and GJ will get hopefully the way it will work out will be the reps in the fourth. Nick will start next week, so it was Mike's day in the rotation. That was the easiest way for us to do it, and then we'll make sure the rotation works out that Nick will get to start next week.
To other games from tonight, the Lions will host the Jets. The Packers will welcome in the Cardinals. The Jaguars will play the Dolphins in Jacksonville. The Saints will meet the Chiefs in New Orleans. The Bears square off with the Panthers, and the Vikings host the Texans. That's a look into the world of sports. Have a wonderful weekend. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Chase Scott.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Season tickets for Morehead State football, soccer, and volleyball are now on sale, as well as single game tickets for football. Single event tickets for soccer and volleyball will be available on game days. More information on single game or season tickets is available from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. The Dow ended the week on a down note, as did the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ Composite, and stocks were down. All three of the major indices were down for the week. But even so, the market hasn't lost all that much momentum, as stocks still show a gain of anywhere between 18 and 23% for 2013, depending on which index that you look at. And at the 4 o'clock close, the Dow was actually down 72.18 at 15,425.51. The S&P 500 was down 6.06 at 1691.42. And the NASDAQ Composite was down 9.02 at 3660.11. New York Stock Exchange breadth was 15 to 14 negative. Oil was up 2.25% today, and gold was unchanged. And the Treasury market was quiet as the 10-year Treasury finished with a yield of 2.58%, which was little change from yesterday. In individual company news today, JCPenney shares fell more than 7%. Now, of course, yesterday the stock gained 7% when activist investor Bill Ackman announced he wanted a new CEO and in a letter stated how worried he is about the health of the company. So the stock, even though it was strong yesterday, it gave back all of those gains today. Shares of BlackBerry surged after Reuters reported that the Canadian smartphone company is looking for a buyer to take it private. And on the international stage, both European markets and Asian stocks ended the week on a slightly higher note. Turning now to individual stocks, it was Ashland Incorporated up 69 cents at 89.73, CSX down 12 cents at 25.70, AK Steel up 7 cents at 3.57, Marathon Petroleum up 75 cents at 73.24, AEP down 52 cents at 45, and Arch Coal is up 36 cents, finishing at 452. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Taking a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the cities of Clearfield, Campton, and Hillsboro. Be advised that there is a flash flood watch in effect until 8 p.m. this evening. Tonight, also mostly cloudy with showers likely and a chance of thunderstorms. Lows in the upper 60s. Chance of rain is 70%. Saturday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the lower 80s. Chance of rain is 50%. Saturday night, mostly cloudy. A slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Lows in the mid-60s. Sunday, partly cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the lower 80s. Sunday night and Monday, mostly cloudy, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the upper 60s, highs in the lower 80s. Monday night, mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the upper 60s. Tuesday, partly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs will be in the lower 80s. Currently in Ashland, it is 82 degrees. Flemingsburg, 77 degrees. Inez, 85 degrees. Lexington, 83 degrees. Winchester, 82 degrees. And in Morehead, it is 80 degrees.
Just a reminder to our listeners, programming on Morehead State Public Radio is made possible through the generous support of our underwriters and listeners, Morehead State University, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And that's it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from MSPR staff Mike Williams, Tanner Boyd, Chase Scott, Tyler Klein, and as always, Dan Conte. From KPR, Stu Johnson, Erica Peterson, and Karen Czar. Morehead State University Professor Dr. John Modaff provided our feature segment for this afternoon. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead and translator W202BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Kayla Hall and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Joshua Grandison for Morehead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered from NPR is up next. The time is 5 o'clock.